Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios, overlooking the great city of Austin and helping you maneuver through this modern dystopia, it's episode number 401 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up this hour at 12:45, the Crap Bag previews UFC 270. At 12:30, our NFL notes include Dak apologizing and some coaches interviewing for head gigs. Any mere minutes, Longhorn basketball sucks again. Texas football loses a guy to the NFL. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is a Waxahachie native and level-headed Aggie who may speak your death into existence if he doesn't like you. It's Chad Hastings.
You damn right. Hope everybody's having a good hump day. Decent temperature day. It will be followed by some cold on the way. So get your layers ready.
I heard Kevin celebrating this on the afternoon show yesterday. Just unnecessary.
After what happened in February of 21, how does anybody celebrate cold weather around here?
I don't know. Kevin is somebody who does like the bits of cold, but I feel like if this were to drag on for a month, even he would get tired of it.
I think so, too. So get ready for a little bit of cold later in the week, and we'll actually be out and about later in the week. We'll tell you more about that as the hour goes along. As Trey said, we're going to get into some football stuff, a little basketball as well, but before we do, let's start today's show, unfortunately, with an R.I.P., a rest in peace to the great Ron Franklin, legendary broadcaster in this area, and this area likes to claim him for some obvious reasons, but for a lot of people, it is a national relationship because of the ESPN relationship through the years. Ron Franklin, dead at the age of 79 today. Really sorry to hear that today. And for me, Trey, I saw the timing today. He started at ESPN in 87, but earlier than that, he was, for a lot of people around here, he was the guy because he was the voice back in the day. He was the voice of the Longhorns in the early part of the 80s. Then he transitioned to ESPN. And what I remember him as was when that voice hit my TV, it meant there was a badass night college football game on. That was the signal for me when I heard Ron Franklin's voice.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I relate his voice more to basketball because he was doing so much more of that in the latter part of his career. But
he and Vital did a ton of games together.
Yes, they did. Yeah. He had a smooth delivery, and sad for his family and friends about his passing today.
Absolutely. Rest in peace to Ron Franklin, and certainly I know there are a lot of people thinking of him and the family today, not only because of the relationship with Texas back in the day, but I do believe that the Franklin family has been in this area even throughout his time at ESPN. Always maintained at least one house or some, you know, there's been kind of a home base in this area. So really sorry to hear that. Ron Franklin, like you said, one of the smoothest voices in broadcasting history. He and Mike Gottfried were two of the guys that introduced me to college football back in the day. So we did want to mention that before we get started today. And let's do that. The Specs set piece. We will start with a little Texas football news from right now.
The Specs set piece is brought to you by Specs Wine, Spirits, and Finer Foods. The biggest saves of the match start at Specs, official partner of Austin FC. Specs, the fun starts here.
All right, we may be breaking this story to you just like Trey broke it for me earlier in the day. I had not heard this one yet, but there is a Longhorn that's decided he doesn't want any more of that eligibility. He's going to head off to the pros. We wish him the best of luck. His name is Cameron Dicker.
Dicker the kicker.
Dicker the kicker says, I'm going to go kick in the NFL. He put out a statement thanking the fans and thanking Texas for all that they've meant to him. He ends up, depending on what list you're looking at, he is fourth all time, I believe is what I read, fourth all time in percentage, 86.7%, the fourth best single season mark for a Longhorn kicker. And then if you followed him, you also know, Trey, that by the end of it, Cameron Dicker also proved himself to be a pretty damn good punter before he now is leaving Texas. So are we going to have to get rid of the rhyme scheme when he goes to the pros?
Yeah, I think we probably are, because he's proven himself over these last couple of years that while he is a good kicker, he is an excellent punter. And I think his future as a football player, in terms of a guy, well, I guess getting paid a little bit more than he would be making at the college level is how we have to say that now, is punting the football. Wow. It was impressive to watch him perform this last year. It wasn't quite to the Michael Dixon level.
No.
But he was nearing that point. I mean, I'm thinking back to punters that have impressed me as much as Dixon in my Longhorn watching lifetime. Nobody touches Dixon. But I think Cameron Dicker may be number two for me right now, just in terms of guys that I was impressed just watching flip fields and that really working to the Longhorns' advantage, having a guy that good back there whenever you were having to punt it on fourth down.
Much like Michael Dixon, he performed during a time where the team around him could be shaky.
That's true.
And so sometimes it's hard to see those numbers. It's hard to really appreciate him. But I'd forgotten a 78-yarder against Oklahoma, a 77-yarder against Oklahoma State. But more importantly overall, the average of 46.8 per punt and a Ray Guy semifinalist. They don't just hand that out for no reason. And Trey, you said it today earlier, you thought he should have been a finalist maybe.
I was surprised he wasn't a finalist, and I wasn't keeping close tabs on the other good punters in college football this year. But the biggest difference for Dicker as a punter was the amount of air that he would get under the football. That did resemble Dixon, where it felt like he was kicking it over skyscrapers at times versus guys who can maybe kick it pretty far downfield, but they're kicking these line drives that then turn into really good return opportunities for the guy fielding that ball.
Right.
Whereas Dicker, he can not only kick it far, but he can kick it really high too, leaving very little possibility for returns. And I think the accuracy in terms of kicking it towards his gunners or giving those gunners a chance to down it inside the 10-yard line really improved throughout the course of last season, too.
Yeah, if you don't remember, he was, I'd forgotten this too, he was the All Big 12 first team punter.
Yep.
For 2021.
He was.
And so that is that's a big Longhorn story of the day in terms of not a transfer portal, but a headed to the pros. Cameron Dicker, obviously best of luck to him, and hopefully he will get that opportunity. So now I wonder, I don't recall all the years I've been watching the NFL. I'm trying to remember somebody that actually did both. Generally, you don't do both in the NFL unless there's an injury reason or right now a COVID reason to do both. So I wonder, you know, at some point, how will he declare himself? Does Cameron think of himself as a kicker who did a little punting at the end, or does he think of himself as a guy that found out along the way, wait a minute, if I want to make it in the NFL, I'm going to do it as a punter? And I wonder what special teams coaches are going to tell him too. What is he going to be told in Indianapolis about his future and where they think it is?
They may check him out at both, but ultimately I believe he settles at punter because there were just too many easy misses that he was never able to really get out of his system throughout his 4 years as the Longhorns kicker. And a lot of those were happening early in games. And again, they were easy misses. They were kicks that he should have been able to hit. It's almost like he needed that miss in a game to get locked in to then become this guy that was so clutch, certainly from inside 50, but even outside 50, he had a pretty good success rate.
Somebody says, so without Dicker as a punter, Texas is 4-8 instead of 5-6. How dare you? How dare you? There's no need to do that. Someone else says Dicker's missing out on the NIL opportunities with adult video Megaplex XXX. That's his decision.
Okay.
That is his decision. Somebody else with a Ron Franklin memory from NBC affiliate in Houston. Yes, there are Houston connections with Ron Franklin and the Love You Blue Oiler days. KPRC.
No, I didn't realize that.
Their shout out.
He was the voice of the Oilers for a while?
He did, yeah. And I don't know, I'll be honest, I don't know if it was just radio or if it was TV. Somebody's saying NBC affiliate, so maybe he did some TV covering the Oilers back in the day. You guys can fill us in on that if you have your Ron Franklin stories and kind of, you know, how he matters to you, why he matters to you. So sorry to hear about his passing. So Cameron Dicker headed to the pros. We wish him nothing but the best of luck. Obviously, we've been talking a lot about transfer portal and guys that may come to Texas. This is obviously a guy headed to the pros. Also, on the Longhorn front, Trey, it was another rough night for the Texas Longhorn basketball team, and unfortunately, This one happened in front of the home crowd. Their pattern had been they play pretty well at home. The opponent, for some reason, doesn't really play that well at the Irwin Center. Texas able to handle their business. Didn't quite get the message to K-State last night. Remember the first time they played, the coach wasn't there, all kinds of players. Remember the COVID deal, they only had six guys. They felt like a team wanting to make a point last night, and eventually they kept it close enough in the first half, and boy, that second half from the Wildcats was impressive.
Yeah, their record is maybe a little bit misleading because they have dealt with a ton of COVID issues this year. Even still, this is a brutal loss for the Longhorns, especially with as hot as they came out of the gates. Literally shooting 70% from the field through like the first 13 to 14 minutes of the first half. But then we have something happen, Chad, that seems to happen each and every game with this team, certainly in losses. And that is going long stretches without scoring a point. They nearly finished the first half on a six-minute scoring drought. I think Timmy Allen put a bucket in with just a handful of seconds left to give them 2 points in the final 6 minutes. You just can't suffer through droughts like that and expect to beat good competition. And it totally negated how good they were from the field up to that point, where they weren't forcing too many threes. They were working for good shots, and they were hitting those shots too. And I'm really starting to wonder just what this team's postseason fortunes are going to be if they're struggling in games like this. You expect struggles against the Baylors and the Kansases and some other teams like that. But if you're having a hard time with Kansas State at home, I don't know if this team is fit for the actual tournament come March Madness time. This may be an NIT team before it's all said and done, unless they can get some things figured out over the next couple months.
Well, yeah, you know the old saying about 4-minute segments in basketball games and all that stuff, and it gets more important at tournament time. This is a team right now that in 4-minute segments, you just don't know sometimes what you're going to get. And that's what's difficult. Like you said, this is a pretty good K-State team, but they can be really clunky at times. And it felt like Texas had control.
I'm not even going to call them pretty good. This is an okay Kansas State team.
But at the half, Trey, I'm looking at that score like, well, this should be more.
Right.
This shouldn't be. What was it, 5-4?
Yeah.
And it's just, and I'm, you know, we've talked about it before. I dig Marcus Carr, like the way he carries himself and want to see him continue to try to be a leader. 25 from him, and they lose? Mm-hmm. Oh, I hate to see a team waste a performance like that. 6 of 13 overall, 2 of 5 from beyond the arc, 11 of 12 from the free throw line. There was a sequence in the second half where everything was going through Marcus Carr. He was feeling it, hitting the shots, dishing out. He did have a minus 2 on the assist to turnover, but I thought he had a great night. And then they don't get the win. Here's another shocker for me, Trey. How does Andrew Jones end with 5 points? There was a little sequence there where I thought, okay, he's getting going. He's finding a little bit of a rhythm. And then he didn't. So other than Carr and Timmy Allen, nobody's in double figures. Texas ultimately needed a third scorer. They didn't have it. Bishop all the way down at 2 points. I mentioned Jones and 5 points. Ramey had 5 points. Just a whole lot of not enough from a bunch of guys. Clearly Carr had enough. And Timmy Allen had a great night. You can't get on those two guys. They combined for 40. Mm-hmm. But nobody else came with them. K-State had 3 or 4 guys. I think it was in double figures. Texas needed one more, and they didn't quite have it. Obviously, if Carr hits that shot late, maybe it's a slightly different discussion. If you can get out of there with a win. But that one hurts. That has got to hurt if you're a Texas fan to lose by one like that at home to a team like that.
And this is one that will affect their standing and their final ranking if they do make the tournament. This will be a strike on their record. The fact that they lost to a Kansas State team that was just 2 games above 500 and something like 1-4 in conference play heading into that contest last night. You have to win those games. You can lose those games on the road occasionally, I guess. You have to take care of that business at home. And Texas is not doing that, in part because things are so wildly inconsistent on offense. I mean, they go the first 12 to 13 minutes of the game shooting 70% from the field, Chad, and they finish the game at 42.6%. That means they were somewhere in the low 30s, probably, for the last 30 minutes of the game, or a little bit less than the last 25 minutes of the game. They were probably somewhere in the 30s. That's unacceptable.
Here's another number to me that's unacceptable and weird when you watch it. Your eyeballs tell you something different. I'm watching that first half, and as much as I thought Texas was doing a good job of getting somebody into the paint for a mid-range jumper or driving the basket, 16 points in the paint? 16.
Right.
I know I'm an old man basketball fan. I know I talk too much about points in the paint.
Mm-hmm.
But, Trey, 16 in a home game? When you have Allen, Mitchell played last night, right? Yeah, he did. When you have Allen, Mitchell, and Bishop, 16 in the paint? That's it?
Can somebody please tell me what's going on with Trey Mitchell? Because he was back in the starting lineup last night, but he only plays 11 minutes.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that's part of the answer for figuring out your problems on offense is getting somebody like that more involved.
Yeah, that is a rough game. So now they are 3-3 in conference play. And, Trey, we're going to have to keep bringing this stat up until they change it. Because speaking to your tournament comment, Texas is now 0-3 in the conference when the opponent scores 60. And they are 0-5 for the season when the opponent scores 60.
And more of their opponents than not the rest of the way are going to be scoring more than 60 on them.
You think so?
Yeah.
You think Scott Drew's crew is going to find 60?
I mean, we talked about it heading into that West Virginia game January 1st, which was the first conference game. Like, that record is nice and everything, but if it continues, that is a bad omen for this squad. And right now, I almost hate to make this comparison, but this is giving me Shaka Smart flashbacks, Chad. With the effort that we see on the defensive end, and a few nice moments on offense, but for the most part, it just looks like there's a cluelessness on that end of the floor.
I don't know about you, Trey, but I believe the score was 55-53 when that stat hit my brain. I hadn't thought of it till that moment, and I went, uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at the time, and I thought, this game feels like it's going over 60.
Mm-hmm.
So here we go. And then it was kind of like, all right, rubbing my hands together, see how it would work. Let's go, Texas. Here it is. You're going to have to find a win in a game where the other team scores 60 or more. They couldn't quite get it done. Chris Beard did own everything after the game last night. He also gave the crowd some love, Trey. And watching on TV, felt like a cool atmosphere. It felt like they were engaged. The announcers were giving them some love. Now, to be fair, it was the LHN crew. And maybe they're trying to give a little extra love. But I didn't think they were overselling too much.
Right.
It felt like there was an energy in that building. It felt like the situational stuff we were talking about the other day, it was understood, and they're in a close game, and they're battling, and they're screaming at K-State when they're on offense, and they're, you know, holding off a little bit when Texas is on offense and waiting to explode, you know, on a big basket. That part of it felt like it was good, and that's another reason for me it was such a shame that Carr couldn't hit that bucket or they couldn't play better defense or whatever it was, because that crowd and Marcus Carr they deserved a win last night as I'm watching that game. Maybe others didn't, but I thought those two things looked good, and they just couldn't quite get it done.
And that's a problem. When you're talking about individuals deserving wins, but the team effort just not being there, that is something that's concerning. Now, did you see who was amongst those in attendance at the Irwin Center last night?
You know what? I had somebody send me a little still shot of Gary Patterson in a suite. I'm assuming that's what you're referencing.
It is what I'm referencing. I realize that I may be alone amongst my Longhorn brethren with what I'm about to say. Seeing Gary Patterson wearing the Texas logo made me want to vomit.
Really?
That's
weird.
I am going to have a hard time with that. And I know that he's been around the football program a little bit more recently. We can maybe talk with Justin about that coming up at 1 o'clock, but it's going to take some getting used to for me, and I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that these feelings that I have about bringing him in is more trouble than it's worth is incorrect. But I look at a guy who over the last 4 years was a game below 500 as a head coach, and even worse than that in conference, who also quit on his team midway through this last season. And mind you, this is a program that built a statue for this guy outside of the stadium that they play their home games in.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Gary is rejuvenated now. Maybe Gary is refocused again. But this is a guy who, maybe 1 foot out the door isn't the right way to put it, but this is a guy who wasn't as focused on football as he needed to be over the last 4 years. And unfortunately, you can just point to the results to see just how true that is.
And according to, you know, insider sources and all of that, this thing is just about done. I mean, it's just all but being officially announced, seeing him in a suite last night. They're not trying to keep this a secret. When you got, you know,
in a suite with CDC, mind
in
you.
In a suite.
And Gary Patterson wearing Texas gear.
Right. I mean, there's no secrets here. It is going to be a weird fit, a weird feel. You just hope if you're a Texas fan that it means good defense.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important thing that you hope for. But it is unique. I was trying to think of, you know, did Nick Saban ever bring anybody in as an analyst that was, you know, dyed-in-the-wool Auburn or Arkansas or has a statue outside somebody else's building? It's weird. But that obviously, you know, it is something that a lot of coaches do nowadays, just maybe not this exact way, but it looks like that is going to happen. That's, I know, a lot of what Texas fans were hoping they would talk about last night was a win on the court and then the Gary Patterson thing. The Gary Patterson thing ends up being kind of the bigger story, if you will, in some ways, but we'll see. Let us know what you think about it, Longhorn fans. Are you like Trey? Did you see him in the logo and it just didn't quite look right? Are you concerned about the Gary Patterson thing, or will you take all the help you can get?
I tweeted out my feelings last night, and I had some people agreeing with me and some people who were borderline angry with me for suggesting that Gary Patterson helping Texas out isn't necessarily going to be this peachy process that many are hoping it is. And I hate that I'm being a bit of a pessimist here, but one, that's my nature, and two, I just feel like I see the red flags pretty clearly right now. And I also know the sort of dude that Gary Patterson has been throughout his career, but also the animosity he's felt to Texas, and there's no telling how easily it could be for him to have those emotions flip in a different direction versus this, you know, I guess honeymoon phase that we're going through right now with him.
So here's a great text before we hit the break. This says, I thought the rule was he couldn't coach on the field. That's a great way to say it and ask it. He can't. If it's going to be an analyst position, last night is the most out front, up front you should see Gary Patterson.
That's true.
Period.
That's true.
If he's an analyst, you should see him behind the scenes. I heard a good discussion on B&E today about Will Muschamp. People were like, wait a minute, Will Muschamp was an analyst at Georgia, but I saw him on the sidelines. No, no, remember, Will became the special teams coach when their special teams coach had a medical issue and had to quit. That's different. So if you're a true analyst, you're going to be behind the scenes. So you should not, Trey, you should not have to worry about seeing Gary Patterson wearing your logo after last night.
Until Texas fires Pete Kwiatkowski after the Alabama game this year.
Well, then you would maybe have to see it, yeah.
Because then Gary Patterson takes over as DC, which was part of his nefarious plan all along, and ultimately he will find himself at the top, Chad.
Wow, wow. All right, there you go.
I'm kidding.
Texas basketball last
night.
Kind of. Falls to K-State, falls to a team wearing purple, and then that guy who used to wear purple shows up and wears burnt orange. He was going majority white, though. You can tell that, right? A little uncomfortable going all burnt orange right now. He's going to have to ease into that in terms of the wardrobe. All right, coming up, let's talk some NFL. Dak decided to apologize. We will tell you for what. And let's talk some coaching news, because the Cowboys may end up losing the OC and the DC for next year. Let's get into it. This is The Horn.
Shirts and skins.
Song. What do you got, Trey?
We're doing New Music Friday on a Wednesday, Chad.
Right.
That's because Cam Parker was producing on Monday, and yesterday I was shamelessly promoting Books on Pod. So today, we're talking new music, and that starts with a band that Austin is very familiar with, Spoon. Their new song is called Wild.
Spoon with some new music. How about that? It's good to hear. Good to hear. New music for you coming throughout the day. Lots of good texts already rolling in on the Gary Patterson sighting at the basketball game. Remember, 337-3776 is your Specs text line. This one says, I've never been a GP fan and never will, no matter what school he's associated with. This one says, how sweat-laden was that new UT shirt? How dare you? Not everything may have been as it seemed with the TCU departure. That may be true.
Yeah, he was told that they wanted him to step down at the end of the year, and he said, screw you, I'm quitting right now.
Yeah, but, I mean, there could be stuff behind the scenes maybe that we don't know. I guess that's fair. Patterson's going to sabotage our program. Hook'em comes from one fan. Somebody says they're indifferent to the hire, but Trey's opinion on the matter certainly is something that will linger in the back of my mind. Time will tell. So a lot of different ideas coming out about what Gary Patterson could be. Somebody else says, I don't understand the trepidation of it. If he's a strong defensive mind, that should be all that matters. In theory, you're right. In theory. Because he is a defensive mind. He's a respected defensive mind in football. Their argument too, Trey, is what would TCU have been without Gary Patterson? Some might make that argument. And that's why they build the statue. Because he's that important to them.
He is that important. I don't deny that. But he had clearly worn his welcome out by the time he chose to step down last season.
I think that, yeah. That
so
is clear.
It becomes one of those questions of, well, Gary Patterson has been away from the sport, theoretically, for what, 3 months now? And he's getting back into it in a role that gives him significantly less power. He still has some say-so, but he's in a consulting role now, probably getting paid really well as a consultant, but he isn't able to control things as much as he was in Fort Worth. Is that something that he can be effective in, that sort of role? I don't know if he can.
If I was Gary Patterson, I'd be looking forward to a lot of things with this new analyst gig, and one of them is I shouldn't have to scream my voice out all the time. I don't need as many lozenges as I used to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably not going to be sweating through everything I'm wearing as an analyst, you would hope.
Right.
And then, you know, somewhere down the line, you're also in the live music capital of the world. That's going to matter to him as well.
And you're also in a position that if something were to happen this next season – and they need some help in terms of a guy who understands how to coordinate a defense, it's pretty easy to turn to him do so.
That's going to be a tough one if because Sark has not obviously established the pattern or the, I don't know, factory that Saban has. And not a lot of people have done that. So everybody doesn't know exactly how he'll think of it. But, yes, if the other side of the ball from Sark is shaky early in the season, there'll be questions about Gary Patterson. Again, this is not done yet. We're discussing Gary Patterson because he was seen last night in the suite out in front of everybody with CDC rocking the Longhorn logo. So it would appear that Gary Patterson as an analyst is not that far away from being announced.
We may not have the official press release yet, Chad, but this thing is done.
Exactly. Yeah. In the court of public opinion and the court of social media, he's in. They've just got to make it official over at the 40 Acres. So we'll definitely talk some Longhorn stuff today. If you have thoughts on Gary Patterson and the sighting last night, let us know. If you have thoughts on the death of Ron Franklin, people have been sending some of those memories in as well and tributes. Specs text line 337-3776. All right, Trey, so we are in 2022, and part of this mean, nasty culture is once they've got you, they are going to hammer on you. And even if you try to apologize, they're going to take the apology apart brick by brick and throw the bricks back at you. So I'm going to read you Dak Prescott's apology, and I want you to tell me why he's evil.
Okay.
Deal?
Sure.
Quote, I deeply regret the comments I made regarding the officials after the game on Sunday. I was caught up in the emotion of a disappointing loss, and my words were uncalled for and unfair. I hold the NFL officials in the highest regard and have always respected their professionalism and the difficulty of their jobs. The safety of everyone who attends a game or participates on the field of a sporting event is very a very serious matter. This was a mistake on my behalf, and I am sorry. End quote.
I think it's a good apology. He was caught up in the heat of the moment, clearly frustrated by the team falling well short of their preseason goals and their goals heading into the postseason. And he initially reacted to that as if the fans were throwing trash at him, and then there was a sense of relief that that wasn't happening, while also feeling that they may have gotten a little bit gypped by the refs. Now, I disagree with them getting gypped by the refs. That was very secondary to the performance and the coaching and you know, that last play of the game. Plenty of reasons you can point to as to why the Cowboys lost. The refs are way down that list. But Dak got caught up in the heat of the moment, and what separates the haves from have-nots, Chad, is not that the haves don't ever make mistakes. They acknowledge their mistakes.
Yeah.
And apologize for their mistakes if need be and move on. And that's what Dak Prescott is doing here. And if I'm a Cowboys fan, I'm completely satisfied with his apology.
Yeah, and obviously I was kidding about the apology stuff, because this is one of those guys that you can say what you want about Dak. Is he elite quarterback? Is he this? Is he that? Seems to be a good dude.
Yeah.
Seems to be a decent enough person. So he's trying to apologize here. I think it's critical that he do it for multiple reasons, because one, it's just a bad look. Like, you're saying it's okay that the fans threw stuff at the officials.
That made me cringe when I saw he and one of his teammates both give a big thumbs up to that.
Because that's different than when Randy Gregory a couple weeks ago said, yeah, we'll have to play both those teams later, Arizona and the officials. Well, that's childish, but it's not dangerous in the same way. You're not inciting something or validating it. But the other thing, Trey, that probably matters, Dak Prescott is the Cowboys' Walter Payton Man of the Year candidate this year.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be the guy that's saying those things. That's probably a decent idea there. The other weird part of this story, did you hear what organization called him out on social media for it to get him to apologize?
PETA?
The NBA's Officials Association.
Oh, good God. Get out of here with that.
I'm not kidding you.
NBA officials.
The NBA officials.
Be a less corrupt group, and then you can maybe have some say-so here.
The NBA, the NBRA condemns the comments by Dak Prescott condoning violence against game officials. They're the ones that brought this up and apparently got him to apologize, which he needed to. Let me be clear. He did need to apologize, because that is not that's a comment unbecoming a starting quarterback in the league, but you really don't get to say it if you're the starting quarterback for that team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Derek Carr probably could have said that and got away with it. Maybe. If there'd have been a weird call in that game and he says it, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But the Cowboys quarterback, no, you're going to have to own up to that at some point.
That's true. Speaking of Cowboys quarterbacks, Chad, did you see what Troy Aikman had to say about what happened with the Cowboys on Sunday? He was in an interview with The Ticket, I guess, earlier today.
I did not hear it yet.
He shared some thoughts. I'm just going to read the quote verbatim.
Okay.
San Francisco, he was asked about, real quick for a setup, he was asked about CeeDee Lamb having only one catch versus the 49ers.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty awful, but CeeDee Lamb was conspicuously absent from this offense for much of the second half of the season. Very frustrating.
Just like Cooper. Both of them were kind of gone.
Much like Cooper, you're right. San Francisco rushed four guys for the most part. They blitzed occasionally, but they're a four-man rush football team. But a lot of times when you say that, then you think they're playing coverage. They mixed in some coverage, but there was a lot of single coverage on CeeDee Lamb. I hate going back to when I was playing because nobody cares, but what I see around the league.
Yeah, we do, Troy.
It's not just.
We really do, actually.
It's not just Dallas. I've seen it with a lot of teams. A lot of these offenses want to scheme things. The coordinators, it's all about scheme rather than this corner is playing soft. He's scared to death. Just run the route tree, run a comeback, run a dig route, run a curl, run anything. You're going to complete the pass wherever you want. Michael Irvin would have had 10 catches at halftime if they played us the way they played CeeDee Lamb in that game. The game is not that difficult. If I've got a great player at wide receiver and a corner is playing him single coverage, throw him the ball. He's going to win most of the time.
There you go.
I mean, if you insist on passing,
yes,
you may want to modify things.
Yeah.
And do a little bit more like what number 8 is suggesting.
Plus, like number 8 is suggesting, and Jerry kind of forced your hand in another way, when you're panicked, do what Troy did. Throw to 88. They've even forced him to wear the number. He's right there. Yeah, I don't get it. That's a, you know, hey, number 8 is number 8. He knows the game. not only did he know it from that perspective, now he's watched all that he's watched, breaking it down. I completely agree with him. I mean, how do you do that? How do you allow your two best receivers to be taken out of it? That's on you. You've allowed it to happen. They're not doubling both of them on every play. If they were, Dalton Schultz should catch 12 a game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got that. That's the thing that, you know, has struck me about them for a long time. Whatever the original plan is, if it fails, they do not have a plan B.
I love this new salty Troy Aikman. I don't know if it's rolling that new beer out, that organic beer that's a little bit healthier for you, or what else is going on with that guy right now. But I'm liking the more opinionated Troy Aikman.
It's a drinking man's Troy Aikman's what it is.
I feel like part of it is him having to deal with just the ridiculous social justice warrior blowback that's tried to come after him a couple of times.
That's probably it.
He's like, all right, if I'm going to be dealing with this crap when I'm trying to be as PC as humanly possible, I'll maybe give them a reason to have their feathers ruffled with me at times, and not in a way that's harmful to anyone or anything. It's just giving more of his opinions. I think it's valuable.
One of our Cowboy fan listeners did point out that Dak has yet to apologize to Cowboy fans for sucking on Sunday. You're right about that. He did not apologize for that. That's fair. Coming up next, we'll get you a little crap bag, a little UFC 270 preview, plus something the NFL is doing right now. It's got me a little concerned. Tell you what it is on the horn.
Shirts and skins.
Something else there. Only thing I thought of when it started was Gwen Stefani. I don't know if that's her.
Oh, that does sound a little bit like
Gwen.
Yeah, it does.
Who
this is actually Emily Wolf, though, Chad.
Oh, I should have. You know what? I just should have guessed, because then I would have impressed our man Tom.
Tennis Tom did let me know that Emily Wolf has a new single out. It's called The Slider, and apparently it is a T-Rex cover.
Oh.
I like what I'm hearing so far.
Well done, Emily Wolf. The only thing better than a cool cover is a cool T-Rex cover.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Spoon and Emily Wolf have some new stuff out there for you if you want to check it out. Lots of good text rolling in today on Dak Prescott and his apology on Gary Patterson and the fact that he looks like he is going to be an analyst at Texas since he's in the suite last night with CDC and wearing the gear and all that in. Somebody says the Gary Patterson job is a done deal. I put my application in over 2 weeks ago and I haven't heard a thing. So there you go. So maybe that is about to happen. So we get reactions on that. Also, rest in peace to the great Ron Franklin. Some people giving their memories of Ron Franklin, whether they are Longhorn folks or Houston area folks or college football fans. He is dead at the age of 79. So sorry to hear about that. And we know there are members of the Franklin family still in the area here around Austin. So we are certainly thinking of you guys today. All right, coming up, we will get you our normal Wednesday conversations. Unfortunately, today's version will be a little Cowboy sadness in both cases. Justin Wells, Inside Texas and On3.com. He'll join us at 105. We'll talk Longhorn stuff. We'll talk Gary Patterson. We'll talk about that basketball team. And yes, he's a Cowboys fan, so we'll get his thoughts on Niners over Cowboys. And then at 2:05, Ari Temkin of the Cowboys Radio Network to talk about what they saw from AT&T Stadium. Ari, better than anyone, knew it was going to be a tough matchup, and then it ends up looking like that. So we'll get his thoughts on the Cowboys' loss, what it means now, the coaching stuff, and we'll get into kind of how things could look different in 2022 for the Cowboys. All right, let's get into a little bit of crab bag here, get you a little UFC preview, plus the NFL's doing something I don't quite understand.
Chad's crab bag.
Crab bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, Just think of a bag of crap.
Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. So this Saturday night, you're going to be focused in on the NFL. Just remember, there is a UFC pay-per-view, UFC 270. If somebody tries to convince you that it is a great card, they are lying to you. Two fights matter. The rest of it kind of falls apart. But it is two championship fights, and for me, it's going to be worth the money for ESPN+. Just know, though, it is very, very top-heavy. First off, we have the flyweight championship with Brandon Moreno against Davidson Figueiredo. This is fight number three. First one was a draw. Great fight. Second one was a Moreno submission win, and he becomes the first Mexican-born champion they've ever had at UFC. This is chapter three. It should be a great fight. These two guys put on a show every time. That's for 125. Then the big dogs hit it with the heavyweight belt. Francis Ngannou against Ciryl Gane. This is the one everybody's been waiting for. Let's see if Ngannou can make his first defense of the belt and become the badass a lot of people thought he could be. Because when you look at it, Trey, you know that name. I know you're not the biggest UFC guy, but you know some of the crossover names. I know you know who Francis Ngannou is. He looks like an undefeatable, like, video game movie villain kind of stud.
Yeah.
And if he can get going and be consistent, he's one of those guys that I don't know if anybody can touch him in that division. We'll see if Gane is the kind of guy that can do it, because Gane's had some impressive wins, but I'm really interested in this fight. I'm rooting for Ngannou. I'd love to see his story continue from Cameroon. Incredible journey that he's been on. I'd love to see him keep that belt.
Yeah, you and a lot of other people are very entertained and impressed with Ngannou, and so hopefully he can keep it up, because he is described by you, Joe Rogan, and others as a dude that will just absolutely mash his opponent.
Yeah, he's incredible. But then there's also been some weird little shaky moments where you're like, wow, really? So there's certain things there. This is hopefully his chance to kind of reset the path. That's Saturday night at 9, ESPN Plus pay-per-view. So when the Niners and Packers are done, I don't think that championship fights will have happened yet. They'll probably still be in the offing, which is what I'm hoping for the order of everything. Now, Trey, speaking of NFL, I have a little concern about something that's going on in the NFL. I'll admit this is personal because one of my teams is affected. So I'm a Bucs fan in addition to being a Cowboys fan, which means Todd Bowles is kind of important to me right now. And when I read that Todd Bowles is going to interview for a job this Friday and then interview for another head coaching job on Saturday, I get a little concerned. And I like the fact that they've rearranged their rules a little bit to try to prevent the Eric Bieniemy problem from the last few years, where you're not allowed to talk to him until the Chiefs end their run, and then it's too late. Okay, fine. But, Trey, Friday and Saturday? Can't we make a rule that it has to occur on a Tuesday or Wednesday? My man's got to coach against the Rams and Stafford and OBJ and Cam Akers and McVay on Sunday afternoon. I know it may be Zoom or whatever, but really? Friday and Saturday, he's going to be distracted like that, and then he's got to coach the game Sunday.
Even the Friday thing seems a little too close to game time. Saturday is entirely too close. I don't care if it is a Zoom call. He needs to be 100% focused on that Rams matchup.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're Bruce Arians, while you want him to receive that next great opportunity to become a head coach, you don't want this happening a day before the game. That's insane.
Yeah.
There has to be some happy medium between how they used to do things and how they're starting to do them now.
Because I get that in college it is Wild West stuff, and I get that Lanning of Georgia just was dealing with all the Oregon stuff plus the Georgia thing, and they still won the title. I get all that.
Yeah, let's not use college as an example for most of this stuff.
But the NFL's never done it this way.
Right.
And that's what concerns me. I saw it on the crawl last night. I'm watching Texas basketball, and it's like, Todd Bowles to interview for two jobs. And first I thought, well, good for Todd. That's great for him. Then I'm like, wait a minute, what do you mean Friday and Saturday?
Yeah, you said that to me in pre-show, and you said Friday first. I'm like, good God, that's way too close to the game time. And then you said Saturday, and I'm like, what are we doing here?
I think it's Vikings-Bears, if I'm not mistaken, are the two teams. Not that that matters. But, okay, and then you would hope it's a Zoom. There's no way they're going to let him travel twice for all of that and then get all the way back to Tampa. Let's hope not. So that'd be something to kind of keep an eye on of, do we start to see a distracted-looking side of the ball for different teams if their guys are interviewing? I mean, heck, Byron Leftwich has interviewed for a job, and other guys that we're about to watch. I'll give you another one in the same game. Raheem Morris is going to get a look at somebody's head coaching job. Can't recall who it is right now, but somebody's going to talk to him. I think maybe, is it Detroit that's going to talk to him? Or Minnesota. I'm sorry, not Detroit. I think Minnesota may be talking to him.
Brian Daboll is interviewing with the Giants, I believe.
Yeah, there you go. And he's with the Bills. Yeah, so the fact of when these things occur, if I was the head coach in these situations, if I'm McVay, if I'm Arians, whoever it is, this would concern me, and I would try to set up my own set of rules. Of course, you can talk to them, but why? No, not on a Saturday.
If I'm the NFL, I'm dialing this whole thing back. There doesn't need to be a rush on filling that head coach vacancy. And why is that, Chad? Because when your season is over, you don't really have to worry about a whole lot over the next month as the postseason is playing out. So I would have no issues with a freeze on interviews until we get, let's say, maybe to the week after the conference championship games, where everybody, including the teams that are going to the Super Bowl, have a hypothetical week off before things do gear back up for media night and just all the craziness of the week leading up to the Super Bowl. Yep. At that point, you have a little bit of time to breathe, and you also have time to conduct interviews if need be.
We'll see how that all plays out. Lots of interviews going on around the NFL. Remember, if you're a Cowboys fan, Denver is interested in both of your guys. They want to talk to the young, hotshot OC, and they want to talk to the established DC, Dan Quinn and Kellen Moore. And they, of course, have time now. But those two guys will both get interviewed by Denver if it hasn't already happened as I'm speaking here. All right, coming up, your 1 o'clock hour, Justin Wells, Inside Texas and On3.com. The basketball team loses last night. Looks like the football team will gain Gary Patterson and a certain tight end out of the transfer portal. Plus, we'll get Justin's thoughts on the Cowboys' loss. Don't move. It's the Horn.